The next case this morning is United States against Jones. Mr. McKinley.
It pleases the court. Good morning. I had occasion to speak with the Chief Deputy Prosecutor of Madison County, Indiana, about a month ago, who summarized this case with the very poignant observation that when it comes to comedy and when it comes to practical jokes, timing is everything. David Jones' timing wasn't very good. Obviously, October of 2001 was not a time to be putting white powder in public places and making rumblings about anthrax. That's what David Jones did. David Jones stipulated to having engaged in this conduct prior to trial, and we proceeded to a bench trial really to ask the court to determine whether the conduct of this young man with 61 IQ in placing powder next to the sink in the men's bathroom at the local truck stop was malicious conduct. That was the issue, that was the focus of the issue at trial. And during the course of that trial, another issue came up, was raised, that we raised, that being the issue before the court today. That is whether the indictment was legally sufficient to charge an offense under 18 United States Code Section 35B. The way I read the statute, and I don't think there's any disagreement as to what the elements are, there are four elements. That number one...
Is there any... I understand you're challenging the indictment. I just wondered whether you are challenging in any way the district court's findings of fact.
No, we are not. I mean, with respect to its determination
right.
on the...
But that raises the question what difference the indictment makes. If the district court found as a fact, beyond a reasonable doubt, everything that on your view is necessary, why does it make any difference that it was omitted from the indictment at this stage?
Well,
the Supreme Court has held in a number of recent cases, such as United States, Nader against the United States, that even omissions of elements from indictments can be harmless error. And here, in a bench trial, we could be pretty sure it was harmless error since the district judge found everything.
I understand, Your Honor. The argument here, I guess, stems from my client's Fifth Amendment right to have the grand jury consider and find all the elements to be present. And the question is, what was the grand jury thinking when it returned
to the... Nader says that's not the question anymore. Mm. Once the defendant is convicted, and we're sure that the trier of fact found all the elements beyond a reasonable doubt, then it just doesn't matter what the grand jury was thinking. That's the holding of Nader. Now, in a jury trial, that may be very tough. We may not be sure what the jury has really found, because it just brings back the general verdict. But in a bench trial where we've got findings of fact and conclusions of law stated separately by the judge, it's pretty easy.
Well, again, my client's position all along on this, Your Honor, has been that he's been deprived of his Fifth Amendment right to have the grand jury review the facts, compare the facts to the appropriate, the applicable law, the indictment, the way it's drafted, disable the jury's ability to adequately review those facts against the applicable law. That his position has been that one can act knowingly, one can act willfully and maliciously, but without knowing that the information that is imparted was in fact false information. That's the defect that my client has driven home throughout the course of this appeal. And that having been said, we take exception with the government's suggestion that that the indictment was sufficient for him to be aware of what offense was being charged and to prepare a defense. Again, it's the Fifth Amendment right to have the grand jury consider all the elements, which he was deprived of in this instance. And accordingly, we'd ask the court to reverse the remand with an order to dismiss.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. McKinley. Ms. Jackson.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Sharon Jackson. I'm an assistant United States attorney representing the United States of America. We ask this court to affirm the conviction of Mr. Jones and find that the indictment was sufficient in this case, that it adequately, by a reasonable construction, informed him of all the elements of the offense, and most importantly, that Mr. Jones has shown no prejudice from the drafting of the indictment. The indictment set forth all of the essential elements, apprised him of the nature, gave enough specificity as to the act that he was put on notice of what he needed to defend with. Given the history of this case, the fact that trial briefs were filed with the district court that set out each person's position, it is clear that Mr. Jones fully understood what he was charged with. And in fact, the bottom line is he personally set in motion all of the acts that created the false information. This is not a situation where someone else perpetrated the hoax and he reported the information not knowing whether it was true or not. He is the one solely responsible for setting all of these acts in motion. Therefore, he had absolute awareness that the information was false when he caused it to be imparted to the authorities. If there are no questions from the panel, I would waive the rest of my time and rely on the brief submitted. Thank you.
Thank you. It looks like we don't. Mr. McKinley, once again, as with your predecessor, I'd like to thank you for your assistance. Thank you for accepting the appointment. Many of these cases are not easy, but we thank you for a job well done. The case is taken under advisement.